Another episode of We the People Radio. And today it was an episode. Whew, made it just in time. Oh my gosh. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Kundiff. And our sponsor is Team...
Easy for you to say.
Run that back. Our sponsor
oh, that is...
Oh,
that's kind of funny. I didn't even notice. Yeah, wrong name.
Yeah, Papay Machinery. Huh. Papay Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they are everything John Deere. Go by and see them. They've got mowers, tractors, attachments, full parts sales and service. Give them a call, 226-9226, or get them on the web at papaymachinery.com. There you go. See, I knew I could do it.
It's kind of funny. Sometimes at work, I still answer the phone, George's Equipment.
Yes.
Not
where's
done that.
Where's that come from?
2005.
Yeah.
Just not to put too fine a point on it. So apparently doing that for a number of years will cause you to just, you know, say stuff. Oh, that's interesting.
Go into auto mode.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was on auto mode. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Who's our guest today?
Well, what I was going to tell you is, that's interesting, but our website comes up with red writing and it says suspicious.
Uh-oh.
We're apparently suspicious. So if you'd like to be suspicious, and I guess anymore that's kind of a good thing. You might want to join us in suspiciousness. You can find that all that suspicious at wethepeopleradio.us. And I'm not sure why we would be suspicious today.
Well, because we're going to get a whole new set of leaders here pretty soon. And you know, the NSA is going to be taking another real hard look at this radio show.
Well, you know, they're not really. They just farm it out to the Chinese.
Oh, that's right.
They've been watching it for so long. They're just going to
we're doomed. Yeah, they've already got our number. Yeah, they just push a button and ding.
I know.
No more.
And they do it all the time, too. It's very frustrating.
I know it.
Oh, my gosh. All right. So our guest is Peter Friedman, and his voice sounds familiar. You heard him last week. He was we played a show from January that I thought was really good and very timely and had not expired, the Islam factor in current U.S. policy. So if you're not busy watching the Chinese, you should be watching the other guys. Actually, we should be watching all of them. But we don't all have time, so we count on guys like Peter Friedman to help us. But today he's wearing a different hat. Today he is wearing his NRA hat. So he's been instructing firearms for over 50 years. His expertise is mainly in handguns with expertise in all calibers. And he's an NRA Life member. And we posted all his credentials on the web just in case, you know, you want to be, I don't know, you want to know if we're fooling or not. I won't read you the whole list, but basically he's NRA certified in everything. I don't see anything about like flamethrowers or cannons, but mostly everything else. And he was a U.S. Navy small arms instructor, reserve deputy sheriff, reserve deputy sheriff pilot, and founding member of Oath Keepers. He just he's done all sorts of stuff. He's on the sheriff's posse in Contra Costa County. Instructor for the Community Emergency Response Team. And so today we thought we'd have him chat with everybody about home defense and the Second Amendment. Since, you know, everything...
Since we still have one.
You know. And everything is so calm and cool, I don't know why anybody would care about home defense, but it's just a thought that might be timely right about now.
Might be nice to know.
Yeah, hanging up the no Antifa here is probably not going to save you.
No.
And actually hanging out the Black Lives Matter flag won't save you either because it seems like those businesses get burned down too. So
what about the defund the police? I could put that sign out.
Oh, well, that would solve your problem in one of two ways.
Yeah, that's true.
If the activists didn't burn it down, the police would just drive by. So that'd be the end of that. Oh, my goodness. So you can find all that. Let's see. Today is December 6th, and that's at wethepeopleradio.us. And we'll also have a commercial-free archive up after the program and a video if you'd like to see what we're actually doing in here. Probably not good. So that being said, off to you, Mr. Friedman. Save us from ourselves.
That's a tall order. You know,
I'm
it's
sure.
been too long. I can't believe it's been almost a year. And
I know. I thought maybe I screwed up and forgot to list some other shows because I always list, you know, previous shows on the page, and I'm like, wait a minute, January? That was the last show we did?
Yeah. Boy, I'll tell you something, I'm ready for 2020 to be over.
Boy, you and everybody else, that's for sure.
Yeah, people wanted to boycott, what do you call it, daylight savings. You know, usually people want to boycott daylight savings just because it's a pain. But they just didn't want an extra hour of 2020. So this year was like the best year to actually boycott daylight savings, but didn't work out.
Okay, well, today we're going to have some fun. We're going to learn a lot.
Nice.
I'm going to go through what I have been teaching as far as inside the home and home defense and the laws in California regarding it, what to do, what not to do, and basically talk about information on a citizen's right of self-defense. It's a little different in California, as you can imagine, from other states. And then in California, we have a couple of instances where we're actually better than most other states,
whoa,
which most people don't know.
Yeah, that's a new
confusing
one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that when you were kind of talking about my background that didn't get mentioned was that I'm a Northern California regional counselor for the NRA's Refuse to Be a Victim program. And what's fascinating in California especially is the fact that that is an excellent program that is put out by the NRA for many years, does not involve firearms, but the minute you add those three letters NRA, people run for the hills.
Yeah.
So it's just crazy. So we're going to kind of talk about a couple of things here that are important. First of all, situational awareness. And situational awareness feeds into how not to be a victim. We'll talk about how to safely and legally transport a handgun in California. We're going to talk about some fundamentals of handgun marksmanship, which most people don't know. Including a lot of instructors. By the way, I'm an NRA training counselor for many years, and I'm the guy who trains and certifies NRA instructors.
Okay.
So we'll talk about the California laws that are associated with handguns, different types of ammunition, and which ones that you need to use, especially defending your home so you don't shoot through two walls and kill your neighbor. And I want everybody to understand that this is very basic information, okay? I also am certified to do the Advanced Defensive Pistol course, personal protection inside, outside the home for CCW, concealed carry. And I also do the concealed carry course here in Contra Costa County for the Sheriff's Office and several of the individual police departments. What I'm going to provide you today is experience-based information, what works in the real world. It's very interesting. I went to two academies. The first academy was the L.A. Sheriff's Academy back in 67, and then the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Academy in 79. And in each instance, when I got out of the academy and started actually working with a field training officer out on the street, the first thing that I was told was, you know everything you learned in the academy? Yes, sir. Forget it all.
Nice.
Because it doesn't work out on the street. One of the excellent things that the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office does is when you graduate as a deputy, you will spend the next 18 months working the jail. Because the Sheriff's Department figures that if you have personal interaction with inmates, it gives you a better idea of who they are, what they think, and how they act out on the street. It allows you to give a better understanding and a rapport with these people when you encounter them in situations. This de-escalation, stuff like that. So it's really very good. So in order to start with, and this is a class that I have been teaching for many, many years, I have been teaching a lot of this in the last 2 or 3 months. And what I've done because of this virus is I've been now taking this class from a group session down to meeting people in their own home, going through what I'm going to tell you in the next 2 hours for the most part, and then doing an audit of their premises and finding and pointing out soft entry points into their homes, how they can better protect their homes, and out on the street, too. Okay? So...
Nice. We have to take a quick break, but then we can get started. We also have all of these really handy PDFs set up for people. So if you're referencing one of those, maybe you could, for anybody who happens to be online with us now or in the future, maybe you could just tell them which one you're pulling from as we go forward.
Oh, absolutely.
So we posted all that for you so you don't have to memorize all of it. And, hey, if you're not in California, you still have a home. You still probably have self-defense needs. Your laws there probably won't be as kooky as ours, except it sounds like we have a couple of good ones. So you can apply this pretty much anywhere, and so stick with us here. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass has a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Almost like a circus beginning.
Not to disappoint.
It kind of always reminds me of the circus a little bit. Okay. So I'm sorry, where are we starting, Mr. Friedman?
Well, we're going to start with mental preparation, but I just wanted to let you know that if you go to my website, friedmanhandguntraining.com, you'll find the five tutorials on the five fundamentals of marksmanship. And it's excellent. It's put together by my wife, Rose, who is also a certified instructor.
Give us the name one more time.
Friedman Handgun Training.com. And it's the best website on the internet.
And there it is.
I've heard that.
Number one. Yeah, you get that. And you click on some of the tutorials. And they're amazing. She's just done an amazing job. Each one of us an MP4. They take about anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, and you'll be a far better marksman after you look at these. And everything on the website is free. There is nothing there for sale. And it is absolutely a terrific website. We've had it up for the last 8 years, I guess. And it's even used by some law enforcement agencies for initial training. And you'll really get a good piece of knowledge out of it. So, under mental preparation, for example, I had these two nice old ladies who lived down in Rossmoor, down in Coco County here, and they came in to go through this class. Their husbands had moved on one way or the other. They were in their mid-80s, and they said during the class that we're here to decide whether or not we're going to buy a firearm to protect ourselves. And I said, well, I said, are you capable of using deadly force? And they kind of looked at each other, and I don't think either one of them weighed more than 90 pounds. They were really cute, blue hair, you know. And well,
you gotta watch out for the old ladies,
though.
They can be tough.
Oh, yeah. And then, I said, well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, if somebody breaks into your home, you know, they're not there to do your dishes or wash the floor. you know, in California, if you break into an occupied home, 90% of the law is on your side, which is kind of funny in California. We'll get to that later. And one of them said, well, are you talking about shooting them? And I'm going, I'm talking about defending yourself and neutralizing the threat. What would you do? Well, I think I'd try to shoot him in the leg. I said, no, that doesn't work. I said, you're in the dark, all right? It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're not that good a shot, okay? And you don't want him to come through the door and get that far anyway. Well, then maybe I'd fire a warning shot in the air. I said, ladies, you live on the ground floor.
So you can shoot your neighbor.
Living above you. Okay? Gee, I don't really think I could, you know, shoot another human being. And I said, okay, no problem. I said, here's your money back. And I said, take some of that and go down to Home Depot and buy yourself 2 cans of Hornet spray. Yeah. Why the Hornet spray? Because Hornet spray is a stream of oily liquid that will shoot about 15 to 20 feet. It's kind of like, how close to an active hornet's nest do you really want to get? So then the question was, well, buy 2 of them. I said, well, you're going to put one on the nightstand in the bedroom, and you're going to carry the other one in your car, which seems today with Antifa and BLM running around, stopping traffic, coming up to cars. Yeah. If you roll your window down about 6 inches and you can hold that can of spray out and you can hit them and they're going to go away. So that is one thing. I have a better option, however, which we'll talk about. So if you are going to have a home defense plan, you have to develop that plan. You have to decide where the bedrooms are. You're going to have to decide where the line of fire happens to be so it doesn't go through your bedroom door in the master bedroom and go into the adjoining bedroom across the hall where you may have kids sleeping. So this is all situational. You're going to have to practice the plan, okay? Because when 3 o'clock in the morning and the adrenaline starts pumping, what you do really reduces down to the highest level of your training and what you've done. And then you have to continue training, all right? Firearm marksmanship is a very perishable skill. What I'm going to give you today is going to be theory. And if you talk yourself through the theory, God forbid the time ever comes or when you're out at the range, your marksmanship will be a heck of a lot better than not doing what I'm going to tell you and just throwing holes in paper. If you ever go to the range, the first thing you ought to do is sit there quietly, watch the bench, watch the other shooters for about 20, 30 minutes, and you will notice that they all shoot differently. Most of their targets look like they were hit with buckshot. And when I'm at the range, I usually go up to the worst of these and I go, you know, can I help you? I think I can help improve you. I hand them a card and they say, I don't understand why I'm not hitting the target. I'm focused on the target. That's your problem. You cannot focus on the target and hit it unless that target is within 15 or 20 feet from you. So you have to focus on the front sight of the firearm. Doesn't make any difference whether it's a pistol, shotgun, or a rifle. You focused on the front sight. All right? There's a very simple little test for that. Hold your thumb in front of your face about 2 feet or extend your arm out as far as you can. Hold the thumb up and put your thumb over something in the distance, 25, 30 feet away. If you are looking at the target, your thumb will be blurred. But if you look at your thumb and you bring your thumb into focus like the front sight of a firearm, and then you move your focused thumb over that target, you will discover that the thumb actually covers the target and you will be able to hit it. Very simple process. So under mental preparedness, we have 3 different levels that we deal with. First of all, a low level is when you're sitting in your home, you're sitting in your studio right now, and you don't expect a bunch of bad guys to come barging through the door. So you're relaxed, you're not thinking about a lot of stuff outside the home. The second level is the moderate level. You're in a familiar area, but you're surrounded by strangers, such as going to the supermarket. You're there, you're looking for what you want to put in your cart, and you're not really focusing on other people around you, most of whom are going to be strangers to you. Cardinal rule, any stranger is a potential threat. You really don't want to let strangers get between you and 21 feet away, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. That's called the legal lethal distance. And then you get into a high level, okay, which we're not doing now with this crazy virus, going to a rock concert, going to a football game, baseball game.
Going to anything.
Whatever, with a whole bunch of people, and you're shoulder to shoulder with them doing something, and you don't know who they are. So, you know, you could have a pickpocket around, but that's the highest level that's associated with crime. So let's talk about the home, for example. In your home, walk around the house. Take a look at your external landscape. Take a look at your shrubbery, especially shrubbery near the garage door or the front door, someplace where somebody can hide so that when you open the garage door, they can slip in, or when you come home, you open the front door, and they're hiding behind that hedge or that bush, and they can then push you into the house and come into the house with you. Bad guys don't like noise. They don't like light. So take a look and find out if you have enough motion floodlights around the house, backyard, side yard, something that is going to surprise a bad guy if they are detected. Those lights turn on and they're gone. A lot of homes have interior glass doors, sliding glass doors, sliding windows, and sticking a broom handle in the frame down at the bottom on a sliding glass door does absolutely no good at all. For the simple reason that anybody can go over to Harbor Freight or Lowe's or Home Depot, buy themselves some large suction cups, and then come from the outside, put the suction cups against the door of the window, and they can lift it right out of the frame and walk away with it. And now they're in your house. So you have to pin sliding glass doors and windows. There are some easy ways to do it, and there are some more difficult ways to do it. You can use roll pins. You drill a small quarter-inch hole at the base in the corner of the slider in the frame, and you go just into the stationary frame, and you pin it. And if you pin it, somebody who knows how to get in there with suction cups cannot just lift the door out or the window out, walk away with it, and they're in your house. You got to create a safe room. Usually it's the master bedroom. All depends how big the house is and where you happen to be at the time there's a problem. But you go to any one of these stores like Lowe's or Home Depot, you get yourself some flip locks. You might have seen them in hotel or motel rooms. It's a piece of sheet metal that flips over and will then lock the door and harden that door. These things, unfortunately, come with 3/4-inch wood screws made out of brass. Throw those away. Get yourself a package of 2-inch steel alloy screws because you want to go through the flip lock, through the door frame, and into the stud that holds the frame. Okay? Most of these don't do that, especially the interior door hinges on doors. You have 1-inch screws holding those on. So what you want to do is you want to back each one of those short screws out and drive that 2-inch alloy steel screw in there so that the door is now held into the stud on the door frame. Had a lady in one of my courses recently. And when I went through this with her, and she calls me 2 days later, and she says, you know, I did exactly what you said to do with the door hinges. She says, I started at the bottom hinge, took out that screw, took out the next screw, took out the third screw. Went to the top hinge, took out the bottom screw, second screw. And when I turned, took out the third screw, the door fell out on me. And I said, oh, ma'am, Darwin is alive and well.
Here's your sign.
Here's your sign.
We have
Bill
to take
Engel.
A.
I said you take the 1-inch screw out and then put the 2-inch screw in there right away.
Yeah.
Oh. I'll tell you about the same lady who asked me about cell phones in a minute.
All right, we'll take a quick break. And hey, this is all on a PDF attachment titled "Basic Pistol Home Self Defense." So, if you are thinking, I'm not going to remember all this stuff, go on there. He's got illustrations. It's all very easy to follow. That's very, very simple. You can find that at WeThePeopleRadio.us on the show for December 6th with Peter Friedman. And there you have it. We will be right back.
When I'm in the shower, I'm afraid to wash my hair. Because I might open my eyes and find someone standing there. People say I'm crazy.
The heart of Texas, back in 1835, they drew a line in the sand. The folks at Gonzales had freedom on their minds. It was all because of a cannon that had kept their colony safe. But then General Santa Anna sent some Mexican troops to take the big gun away. You know what those colonists said?
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you. You'll have to pry from our cold, dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
Probably some unwritten rule about playing songs like that during a self-defense program.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't shoot your cannon in the house either. That's really not
I haven't
advised.
Heard that song for a while, but I'm like, come and take it. I think that's a really good one. You should play that one. Bridge too far? Too soon? Maybe you should have waited a little bit.
Yeah.
All right.
I think so.
Sorry. Okay, so what happened with the other lady who didn't get beaten by the door, or did she? Did you have two?
Oh, everybody else was fine. You know, they understood. You take the screw out, and you don't take them all out, and then the door falls out of the frame on you.
She wasn't married to the FBI guy who dropped his gun in the toilet that you told us about,
toilet.
Was it?
Oh, I'm telling you. You know, it's, I could do a stand-up comedy routine for an hour. Okay, moving on. If you have night lights in the house, you don't want them with white incandescent bulbs in there. You want the bulb to be red. Red does not interrupt your night vision. In your eyes, you've got rods and cones. You have four times as many cones as you do rods. The cones are used during the daytime in daylight. And when it gets dark, the cones go away, and now the rods give you your night vision. The problem is that it's not nearly as clear and accurate as during the daytime with the cones. One of the things that interrupts the rods operating in the dark is white light. That's why I think I told you I've been a commercial pilot since 1975, I guess, 76, and flight instructor since 77. And you will always see, even in the movies, you will see the interior of cockpits, especially on airliners, that are flooded with red light. Because if you turn on the white flood inside the cockpit, then you turn it off, and it'll take you 10 to 15 minutes looking out of the windscreen to see other aircraft. So what you do is you can go over to Michael's, you can go to the Christmas store coming up, the party store, buy red bulbs to put in your night lights. And if you want a really good idea, take a flashlight and go to Michael's or the party store, get some red cellophane, cut a 4-inch square, pull it over the head of the flashlight, put a rubber band around it, and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what most people react. They go, really? Is that right?
That's simple.
Okay. The next thing that I love, instead of actually the Hornet spray, is a simple air horn. You can buy these on the Internet. They're about $8 to $10 a piece. They will fit in your purse, in your pocket, and they emit a 133 decibel scream out of the thing. You hear these at the football games all the time. This thing is absolutely super. So you put one in the car or your purse. You put one on the nightstand in your home. And believe me, if somebody like Antifa or BLM comes up to your car and you're stuck there, you roll the window down a little bit, hit them with this air horn, believe me, they're going away. And it'll attract attention. So now we've got the holidays coming up. People are going shopping. Most of them are online, but people are still going to the big box stores. Go ahead and order a couple of these things. Amazon can get them for you overnight. And when you go with your bag of gifts out to your car in the parking lot, you have your keys in one hand, you've got the bag and the air horn in the other, and if anybody starts to come within 20 feet of you, tell them to stop. If they don't, hit them with the air horn, and they will go away. And that's that 20-foot rule again, which we'll talk to you about in a few minutes. The problem with using the Hornet spray or any kind of a spray, and by the way, pepper spray does not work. Don't waste your money. You have to be within 2 to 3 feet of the bad guy in order for it to have any effect, and all they have to do is blow back at you, and now you're the one that's disabled.
The
same laws regarding firearms and the use of firearms also apply in the state of California to the use of sprays. If you spray somebody, you're going to get sued. That's why the air horn is so much better. Another thing people don't know, and they should know, is that any cell phone, I don't care how old it is, but any cell phone, if you pay for service or not, can be used to dial 911. Most people don't know that. That's a federal law when the cell phones came out. If you have old cell phones...
All you have to do is just hit 911. You don't have to dial anything extra. You just hit 911.
No, but what he's saying is
911.
If you don't have service, so if you have an old phone.
Oh, I see.
If you've got old phones sitting around in a drawer somewhere, put them on a charger, put them in very appropriate places in your home, especially if you have a two-story home. Put one in the kitchen, put one in the living room, and they just live there. And when you take it, it's fully charged all the time. You take it off, you down, hit 911, and it will go through to emergency services. So don't throw them away. Don't donate them. Okay? Put them on chargers. Put them in good places around your home.
Sure. Just plugged in behind the nightstand and in the side drawer. Just drop it in there. Leave it plugged in.
Just leave it.
That's a good idea.
Plugged in. Another good thing is we all have generally modern cars with a key fob. And on the key fob, there's a little red button. And sometimes when we go to the mall, we don't remember where we parked. You press the red button, listen for your horn. Well, that's an alarm system. So don't leave the keys downstairs or in the living room in the dish. Take them into the master bedroom with you at night. Remember, this is all part of developing a plan. Okay, take that key fob in there. If somebody is breaking into your home, you hit the button. And that button is going to activate the horn in your car, and it's good for about 300 feet. So that's another little thing most people don't know.
And a lot of people park in their garage, so that would really make a lot of noise, wouldn't it?
At 3 o'clock in the morning, do that.
Yeah.
So will that air horn. Okay, another really good thing to do is make a little floor plan of your house. And make it about 6 square inches, or at least 4x4, and you can draw it out. A lot of people, don't have AutoCAD and don't have those skills, but you can draw the thing out. And on that floor plan, indicate where the master bedroom is. Because when we show up and we get that call that there's a break-in in progress, then we want to know where you are in the home. Okay? So you make that little floor plan diagram, then you take a selfie picture of the people who should be in the home, and make it so that the faces are easily recognizable, not a great big group shot. You take that selfie and you back it up to the little floor plan. You go over to Staples or FedEx office. You laminate it. And then you go and you go buy a glow stick. You know what a glow stick is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like you bend them and they start shining.
Yeah, you break it. It's got a tube of two liquids on the inside. When you break it, they come together and it glows, lights up. You take a glow stick, you put a ring on the glow stick, you put your house key, your front door key on the glow stick together with this laminated picture and floor plan so that when the police arrive and the dispatcher from 911 says, well, how do the cops get into your house? Because you don't want them breaking anything further. How do they get into the house? Now you tell the police, I've got my key on a glow stick, and I'm going to toss it out the window into the backyard, into the side yard. I can tell you from personal experience going to these kinds of calls, that tells me as the responding officer, hey, these guys are right on, and they've got a plan. Okay, gives you some sophistication, helps us to help you. Glow stick. That's on the website.
See, and most people would completely never think of that, actually.
Nope. That's why I gave you all that information, put it on the website, and let people just download it, print it out, and you're good to go.
All right. So we've got to take another quick break, believe it or not. Free Enterprise is interrupting us a lot today, but we're happy we still have it.
Pay the bill.
Might as well celebrate that. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Every breath you take.
Continuing on.
Okay, so let's take a brief scenario. Let's say it's 3 a.m., you hear glass breaking in the house, voices in the house, movement downstairs in a two-story house. What do you do? Here's your plan. And this is right in the information that's on the website. It's also on my website. So, you know, anybody can go in there, and if you want this read to you again, you podcast this program.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody can pull it up again and go through it again. You might want to go through it maybe once a month. So the first thing you want to do is you got to go to a safe room if you're not there already. At 3 a.m., you should be in the master bedroom. The door is shut. You got the flip lock on there. You've got the hinges properly attached into the stud. You've hardened the door. First thing you do is you get the loaded firearm. That's the first thing you want to do. Get the loaded firearm. Get the cell phone. Get out of the bed. Be kneeling down behind the bed in the dark. Don't turn any lights on. essentially with your arm stretched across the bed and the gun pointed at the bedroom door. Now, you're talking about 15, maybe a maximum of 20 feet from behind the bed to the bedroom door. Okay, that door is 6 feet high, 6.5 feet high. It's at least 30 inches wide. If you can't hit that in the dark by just pointing the gun at it, you might want to throw it at him. So, if you have enough time, you're going to activate the air horn. If you're sure that there are people moving around, the air horn will warn others in the home. You're going to hit the car alarm. If you have more than just the two of you in the house, you have kids in the house, you have visitors in the house, you can use the air horn as part of your plan for home defense by signaling, for example, one long blast on the air horn means that there's somebody who has come into the house, or you can do a whole bunch of short ones, and that would indicate a fire, for example, if somebody smells gas or smoke. In the case of a fire, you touch the door, you don't open the door if the door is hot. If you have a two-story home, you should go over to Home Depot or Lowe's, buy a ladder. It's a rope ladder. It costs about $30, so that if you have to go out the second floor window, you just put the two hooks on the window ledge, let the ladder drop at that point, and get the heck out of the house. Okay, if you need a flashlight, you've got your flashlight with the red cellophane across the lens so that you can look for stuff if you have to. Now you call 911. One thing you need to remember is that all 911 calls are taped. Okay, I told you earlier that in a home invasion, 90% of the law is on your side. You want to make that last 10% go in your favor, and I'll tell you about that very shortly. So you call 911, then dispatcher is going to say, for example, this is 911 emergency. What is your emergency? You say, I believe we're having a home invasion. This is all part of your plan, what you're going to say. My husband and I are in the master bedroom, and we are armed. You got to tell them that you're armed, okay? At that point, they are going to dispatch the law enforcement to your house. On the other hand, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away. So at that point, you're going to call out to whoever you think is in your house, and you're going to have to say something to them we're in the master bedroom and we're armed. Don't come near the door, and the police are on their way. A lot of people will tell you, no, be very quiet. No, you don't want to be quiet because you're building that 10% alibi in the worst case scenario, that last 10%. So you give several warnings, all right? You're now on tape, and when the police get there, you're going to take that glow stick. You're going to tell the dispatcher on 911, we're going to throw this glow stick out the window, whatever it happens to be, so the police can come in. Okay, why are you kneeling down behind the bed at 3 o'clock in the morning in the dark? You're kneeling down because in the dark, and I guarantee this, I don't care who you are and what SWAT team you're from, because I've done it. I've had the experience in doing it and training people. People in the dark always shoot high. So I have a night fire course. And what we teach in the night fire course is to shoot at a silhouette target 15 feet away in the dark, because I guarantee you nobody probably listening to this broadcast has ever fired a gun in the dark to see what comes out of it. You get a 12-inch sheet of flame that comes out of a semi-auto, and you're going to get two sheets of flame that comes out of a revolver. One is going to be straight out of the muzzle of the gun in the front, and the other is a ring of fire that comes out between the cylinder and the beginning of the barrel called the forcing cone. So you're down low, you're stretched out with your arms across the bed, the gun is pointed at the bedroom door, you're continuing to verbally challenge, and if they keep banging on the door and screaming that they are coming in, you've warned them twice, and you shoot right through the door. You put three or four rounds right through the door. Now, again, this is on tape. okay? The dispatcher, after hearing the shots, will come back to you and say, are you okay? Yeah, we're fine. Guy wouldn't go away, tried to break through the door. Don't wait for him to come through the door. If they're not supposed to be in your house and it's not Uncle Louie coming home at 3 a.m. from a drunk, then they're not supposed to be there and they're not there to do anything good for you. Okay, let's talk about what is called the Tueller drill. This is the 21-foot lethal legal distance rule that's used basically in court. This Tueller drill was developed by a retired Salt Lake City PD sergeant named Dennis Tueller, who happens to be a friend of mine, and he now works for Glock after he retired from Salt Lake City. 21 feet. What do we do? So I have a shooter standing 2 feet in front of a paper target at the range. I have another guy standing next to him but pointed in the opposite direction. My wife would blow the whistle, and at the whistle, the shooter would just, he's not holstered, but he would just lift the gun up to the target and pull the trigger twice. At the sound of the whistle, the runner takes off running away from the shooter, and at the first shot, we measured the distance that he got away from the runner, and at the second shot sound, we measured that distance too. I'm pretty good. When I demonstrate this, I am not holstered. And I raised the gun up from the ready position, 45 degrees low. I put 2 rounds through the target. By the sound of the first shot, this guy is 18 feet away from me. By the sound of the second shot, he's 22 feet away from me.
Wow.
Action always beats reaction. So all he has to do is do one thing. He hears the whistle, and he takes off at a dead run, doesn't think of anything else. That's a gross motor skill. I have to use some fine motor skills. So if I have the gun 45 degrees to the ground, and I'm right in front of the target, I have to hear the whistle. My brain has to compute what the whistle means. It's got to send the nerve impulse down my arm to my trigger finger, and then I got to pull the trigger twice. It takes a second and a half for the average person to cover 21 feet. It takes me a second and a half to even think about what I'm going to do after hearing the whistle. So if somebody is within 21 feet of you and you have your firearm holstered, and I do this with the CCW training, you better get the heck out of their way, because before you can get that gun out of the holster, that guy is going to have that crowbar up against your head, or he's going to have that hunting knife in your chest. That's even before you can get the gun out of the holster. So that's why I'm saying, when you're out there in the parking lot or you're out on the sidewalk and somebody menacingly gets within 21 feet of you, you've got to tell them to stop.
Okay, and we're coming back. We have another hour with Peter Friedman. You're going to like it. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
And I'll just give you 5 seconds to just, you know, gather your thoughts. Who's our sponsor today, Bill?
Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery.
Yes, that's it.
Yes, Pape Machinery. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they handle everything John Deere. Go by and see them. They have tractors, mowers, box scrapers, you name it. And just in time for Christmas, go by and see them. They also stock Honda generators and steel products.
Nice.
So if you want chainsaws, weed whackers, they've got it all in stock. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And there you have it.
There you go.
Well, so this is the second hour. So if you missed the first hour, you're going to have to go back and listen to it because there was a ton of information. This is December 6th, 2020. Our guest is Peter Friedman, and you're inspiring people out there, Mr. Friedman. They're getting in the Christmas spirit, and they're thinking about safety. So I had somebody who texted me and said that what you do is you wrap empty boxes under your Christmas tree just as a measure of, you know, not having criminals come in and steal all your stuff. You put empty boxes under there, and it has the added benefit that if your kids are smarting off and you have a fireplace, you just start throwing the presents into the fireplace.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a little child control and criminal buster there. People are locked in their houses. I think they're all losing it. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
You can put that on your website if you like.
And
steal that from Dave.
Start getting out more because there's something wrong with that.
That's some fun stuff right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've gone through the safe room. And really, for the folks that are listening, if you haven't gone to look at these PDFs that he has posted or to his website at friedmanhandguntraining.com, you're blowing it because there's a ton of information. And I guarantee you have not already thought of all this stuff.
No. And the story you were telling about the 21-foot man with a knife, we've done that exercise, and you are absolutely right. You cannot defend yourself with a handgun in a holster from a guy with a knife within 21 feet. You're going to get stuck. You can't get your hand around that gun and up and fire before he can have you.
21 feet's not very far.
It sounds like it'd be a piece of cake.
But then also think about who we're dealing with these days. You know, most of these people are on some weird kind of drugs. They're like 15 times faster than we are. You ever watch them do stuff? Or leap in front of your car in 3 seconds. Sorry, Bill. Didn't mean to bring that up again.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, Bill hit a tweaker.
Yeah, I do.
Bill hit a tweaker. He leapt off the curb and boom, there you have it.
I got a notch on my steering wheel.
He broke the bug shield.
Yeah.
I think that went down as hail damage, but
anyway, Hail Mary damage.
Oh, God, what is this is like true confession. Hurry, Mr. Friedman, save us.
Okay, I got two funny stories for you.
Oh, good. We love funny
along
stories.
Along the same line, put a little humor in here. The first one is I generally will tell women who live alone who don't have a dog, I go get a dog bowl and get some wet dog food and smear it on the sides of the bowl and put it outside the front door. And it just sits there. Then take your cell phone and find an app for dogs barking. Get the loudest dog barking and the meanest dog barking that you can find. Download it into your cell phone. And now somebody comes to the front door and you don't want them there and they won't go away. And they see the dog bowl sitting there. And we've got this from actual inmates. That's where we develop all of this good stuff.
Oh.
And if they won't go away, then you hit the button on your phone with the dog barking, and you holler very loudly by the front door, "Killer, I'll feed you. I got to get rid of this guy in the front porch first. Don't worry about it. Killer, I'll feed you."
And don't
go away.
And don't use a little bitty dog bowl. Use a big one.
Oh, no. No, big dog bowl and some dead food in it. And believe me, that definitely will do the trick.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so as a word of caution, when you dial 911 and you think you're having a home invasion, your biggest goal during that event is don't get shot by the police.
Mm.
And by that I mean once you tell the 911 dispatcher where you are in the home, you cannot leave that location. So, guys, regardless of whether or not it's really quiet and the wife or the girlfriend says, "Why don't you go out and see what's going on?" Take the gun and walk out, and now you're in the dark, and we get inside the house, and what do we see? We see a figure in the dark moving around with a gun in her hand.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it. So the minute you call 911, you have to stay where you told 911 you are, whether that's in your safe room or a closet or somewhere else. You've got to stay there until the police arrive and we clear the house. It's that simple. Okay, so let's get involved in some California law. If you go to Penal Code 25400, Penal Code 25400, it talks about concealed firearms. Okay, it says that they have to be in a locked container unless you have a carry permit. So they have to be in a locked container. It does not say what the material should be for the container. So in other words, you can carry a firearm legally unloaded in a soft side bag as long as you can lock it. So what you do is you take the two zippers on either side, you pull them up together, and they have little holes in there, and you can put that little luggage lock through there. Never, and I stress never, limit your access to a firearm by a key or any kind of a lockbox that uses batteries, because trying to find the key and manipulate the key in the lock is what is called a fine motor skill. Okay? If you have a three-digit lock, a combination lock like the TSA recommends, you put your three-digit code in there, and all you do is you move the furthest wheel, that right-hand wheel, 0 to 9, you move the wheel one digit off your code, because at that point, with the adrenaline running in your system, all you got to do is move that one wheel one digit. And that's how you're going to lock the soft side bag. You can also lock a hard container that way, too. On the other hand, I recommend that you go on Amazon and you buy a firearm lockbox. They're on sale all over Amazon now for less than $20. I just bought a bunch of them myself, as a matter of fact. It is a gauge steel, 20-gauge steel lockbox, metal. It's got a three-digit combination lock on there. Now, when you go back to the Penal Code 25400 says the gun unloaded must be in a locked container. Well, you can have a couple of magazines that are loaded sitting in the container with the gun, and you're perfectly legal. You can transport that gun on the seat of your car, on the floor of your car, within easy access, as long as the gun is unloaded and the box is locked. Most people don't tell you this, but if you read Penal Code 25400, carrying concealed firearms, it's all right there. If you have a car that has a lockable trunk, so we're not talking about an SUV or a truck or a minivan, it has to have a lockable trunk. The Penal Code 25400 says that lockable trunk is a locked container. So you don't even have to have the gun in a lockable container. You just throw it in the trunk, don't put the ammo in it, and you're perfectly legal. Of course, if law enforcement stops you and they want to look in their trunk, they've got to have probable cause or a warrant. Okay?
Okay.
Lockbox, $19 on Amazon.
What about the ones with the buttons?
No.
No buttons?
No. No. You want the simple $19 metal lockbox.
Sure.
Okay? Combination lock on there. That's gross motor skill. You don't want the other one trying to... You know, I had a lady back in San Bernardino who had a home break-in, and she was trying to dial 911, and the only reason that we rolled to the location was because we got a dispatch of shots being fired. No 911 call. We found this poor old lady standing there. She had the cell phone in her hand, and I said, why didn't you dial 911? She was nearly catatonic with fear.
She was still trying to do it.
Still trying to do it and couldn't do it. Could not do it. So trying to dial 911 is another fine motor skill. You also have to select the correct firearm. Now, you guys are funny, meaning the ladies. You go into a shoe store, you see this cute pair of shoes. The problem is it's half size too small. The clerk doesn't have one in your size, and you buy them anyway, and you figure you'll take them to the shoe store and get them stretched.
He doesn't know me very well.
That guy, well, there are exceptions to the rule.
My shoes are all the same. They're wood, just different colors. Shout out to Free Enterprise here, and we'll be right back. Our guest is Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
The party was nice, the party was bumping. And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas started in calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a poor one shot.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
Bad boys, what you want? What you gonna do? Yeah. Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do?
What you gonna do
when they come for you?
Okay, so people don't have good fine motor skills.
No, in the crisis you don't. You fumble around and. Yeah, you don't want to have to
freeze
try
up.
To load your gun. And
okay, so let's go back to the shoes. Yeah. Back to the shoes, Mr. Friedman.
Okay. I want to get into the California law here quickly, but let me just tell you, for example, with a revolver, I've been dealing quite a bit in the last several months with women who live alone who get sold a double-action-only snub-nose revolver, either a Taurus, Smith & Wesson. They're good guns, but they're not good guns for home defense for the simple reason that they are not accurate beyond about 20 feet. The problem is that you have a 10- to 12-pound trigger pull on it. There's no hammer on it, and the very simple way to disable the gun is for the bad guy just to grab the cylinder so the cylinder can't rotate. It's very simple. Never buy a revolver without a hammer. Okay?
I'll throw mine away.
Yeah, well, if you've got a hammer, you cock the hammer, and that way if somebody goes to grab for it, you pull the trigger and it's going to go bang. However, it will not do that if it's a double action only and there's no hammer. So if you're supposed to be focusing on the front sight and you've got a 10-pound pull on that trigger with your trigger finger, what do you think as you're pulling the trigger that front sight is doing? It's bobbing all over the place.
Yep.
So it's those guns are backup law enforcement guns. They belong in an ankle holster with a police officer, and that's about it. That's 20 feet, you'll hit the door. Anything beyond that is worthless. You can't go to the range with it in practice because it's not accurate. It's only got an inch and 7/8 inch long barrel, and it has a lot of recoil. Because of that short barrel. Okay, I want to get into California law. Let's see, hammer fired ammunition. Let me talk about ammunition real quickly. It's not the size of the bullet that necessarily is going to neutralize the threat. It's shot placement. So if you can aim and hit the bullseye at 21 feet with a 22, that might be your gun. If you can't hit the bullseye with a 38 or a 45 or something like that, maybe that's not your gun. It's shot placement that counts. My partner at LA County in 1967, and you can read all about this if you go to my About page on the website, click on Michael Widgerson's name. He was Milton Berle's nephew. We both grew up together in Beverly Hills. And he was killed standing next to me at the academy on Monday afternoon, March 20th, 1967, by the firearms instructor during a training exercise who decided that he was going to make this a little more realistic. He had a little Ruger 9-shot 22. He thought he had put blanks in it. Instead, it held hollow points. And he fired two rounds at us standing next to the patrol car. One went through Mike's heart. The other one went through his appendix, and he was dead in 10 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
A 22 hollow point from about 45 feet away.
Wow.
Here's another little tidbit of information. If you shot somebody through the heart, regardless of what the caliber was, they will still continue whatever they were doing from 14 to 18 seconds. So shooting them through the heart is not necessarily going to stop them if they're coming after you. 14 to 18 seconds. You remember the 21-foot rule?
Mm-hmm.
1.5 seconds to reach you if they're inside 21 feet. So they're still moving along there from 14 to 21 seconds. All right. Shot placement, very important. We talked about magazines, ammunition. Let me get into California law because that's really important here. And you can go on my website or you can download what's on your website. And we can get into that. Jacketed hollow points are what you want to use inside the home. If you're talking about wound ballistics, imagine that from the neck to the top of your head is electrical. From your neck to your waist is hydraulic. And from your waist to your bottom of your feet, that's mobility. So if you ever have to get into some kind of shooting event, what you want to do is you want to hit them as many times in the hydraulics to upset as many organs as you can and as quickly as you can.
That's an easy way to remember it.
Yep. The other thing is, speaking of ammunition, you never want to load your gun for home defense or concealed carry with reloads. Don't ever do it. Okay? Because you don't know who reloaded those things. People go out and they buy them at gun shows, and sometimes they don't work. You want to buy factory ammunition, hopefully American-made. Don't buy ammunition where it's dumped in a box bulk. You should buy factory ammo where all of the rounds are separated from each other, either with cardboard or styrofoam, the way you get it from the manufacturer. Don't buy bulk ammunition just thrown into a box because the primers are banging into each other, the cases are banging into each other, and if you get a dented case in a semi-automatic firearm, the gun is going to jam. So don't do it. All right, so let's talk about some California law here before we run out of time. Deadly force. Deadly force should only be used as a last resort. And the last resort means that you are involved in an unavoidable situation. You're in your home. Somebody has broken into the home. Okay, and now they're breaking into your safe room. You have an unavoidable situation. It's a situation that you didn't start. Meaning you're not on the inside of the house, you got the bad guy on the outside standing on the porch, and you open the door a little bit and you dare him to come in. Now you're the aggressor. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a situation that you really couldn't escape from. So unavoidable, you didn't start it, and you couldn't escape from it. Reasonable force.
Let me hold you up right there. If you are in your bedroom and somebody is coming through the door, are you supposed to exit out your back bedroom door before you confront that person or protect yourself?
Absolutely not. If they're coming through the bedroom door, you're in the bedroom, you're armed, that constitutes an imminent threat to grave bodily harm or worse.
Right. So you don't have to exit. Yeah. Okay.
No. It's California, believe it or not, inside your home is a stand-the-ground state. Most people don't realize that. You're not supposed to retreat. You do not have an obligation to retreat.
Okay. And that's in your home.
Force?
Right.
Pardon?
That's in your home.
In your home. Okay, now, if we go back to the 21-foot rule, if somebody's coming after you, what you need to do is make a lateral move, break their line of sight, and possibly go for cover. You don't want to duke it out to them on the sidewalk. It's not the OK Corral.
Right.
So the smart thing for you to do is you've got to break their line of sight by moving sideways, not backing up, but moving sideways. Remember, action always beats reaction. Now, they've got to react to the move you just made, and at that point, you might be able to get the gun out of the holster if you have a carry permit, or you might be able to go and exit through somewhere and get cover. So that's just using common sense. That's right. Smart.
Why in okay? the... I mean, okay, I'm going to ask something dumb. I mean, I know in the movies they do everything for effect or on TV or whatever, but they're always hiding in the closet. What is the deal with the closet? Is it, does it just make the rest of us who are watching just feel more scared or something? Nobody ever hides yeah. behind the bed. They all hide in the stupid closet.
Yeah, it's like having a mask.
Hiding in the closet is very much like having a mask. I like it.
No, nobody will ever look in there, of course.
Right, right. No, right. Why would they look in the closet?
If you have small kids, I always tell them as part of your home defense plan, let the kids get under the bed, let them go in the closet, and be very quiet. And get down on the ground. You don't have to be quiet in your safe room. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. California law. What is reasonable force? California law defines reasonable force as the minimum level of force required to end a threat without going beyond that threat. So in most cases, if somebody takes a poke at you, you can't pull out a gun and shoot them. Now, it's all situational. For example, if you've got a 5 foot tall, 85-year-old woman who happens to be carrying legally, and some guy who weighs 280 pounds and is 6 foot four knocks her down to the ground, which is going on in the streets of Manhattan every day now. It's a game with these people. What can that guy do to her? He can kill her if he punches her a few times.
Oh, he'd step on her, yeah, just do major damage.
That's why it becomes situational. So if you've got two people that are equally matched, and the worst problem is that you're going to wind up with a bloody nose, you walk away. You just walk away. Okay, there is no cowardice involved in being smart. When I was in the Navy, we'd get into a bar fight somewhere back in the 60s. I'm the first guy out the door. I'm standing on the sidewalk waiting for it to all stop. I don't know. Have you ever been hit with a bar stool?
No, but I was married to someone who got hit with a beer bottle. Tell you what, well, cut your tear duct in half.
Same thing, you know. Yep. It's just, it's not smart. Just get out of the way and let it play out. Okay, so you can't go beyond the initial force of the threat that you're dealing with. And we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, we will be right back. I don't know if you did that on purpose, but far be it from me not to walk through the open door. You are listening to We the People. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Excited. We can now use this song beyond the coronavirus. It'll be our self-defense song.
That's right.
Yes. So no mask, no closet.
We were talking about...
So far, we're excited about that.
Yeah, stand your ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Hey, so what about these people we were talking when we were off the air? And Bill was saying there was an actual 911 call of a lady saying she was hiding in her closet, and there was somebody in her house, and 911 said, stay in the closet. I'm hiding in the closet. There's somebody coming. And then you hear gunshots. And 911's like, are you okay? She goes, yeah, I shot him. Okay, so are they in trouble?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Okay, so just, you know, ponying on that, always try to avoid the use of deadly force. There's a hell of a lot of paperwork involved.
Yeah. And you only want one side of the story, by the way.
Well, yeah, provided the person outside the bedroom door has reached room temperature by the time law enforcement arrives.
Yeah, that's right.
I want to make sure they're fully rehabilitated.
It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Okay, it's pretty obvious, so what has occurred. One thing that you should never do and you can't legally do is to shoot a fleeing person.
Right.
So, for example, I'll give you a scenario. A guy breaks into the house. You come out in the living room, and the guy is standing there by the front door holding a TV, and the guy drops the TV and starts to run out of your house. You can't shoot him because he's not an imminent threat personally to you. Same guy. You come out, and the guy sees you and starts running towards you with the TV. Can you shoot him?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You ever been hit with a TV?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, no. That TV now becomes a deadly weapon inside the house, and he's now an imminent threat. Okay?
Okay.
So we get into the issue of justifiable homicide. What is that? It's the killing of a human being in necessary self-defense or in defense of another innocent person or persons. And in order to be justified, for example, you cannot leave your front door or back door unlocked. Okay? It has to be a violent entry. There has to be some use of force, breaking and entering. An unlocked door is not considered forcible entry. So I just had a couple with a very nice home here down the street from us, and they have a dog, and they leave the slider open to the backyard from the kitchen so the dog can wander in and out of the house all day. And I said, okay, let me tell you something. I said, what are you going to do if somebody comes into the house through the unlocked slider and is now standing in your kitchen? Well, he's inside my house. Can I shoot him? No, you can't. Because you left the door unlocked, and now there was no force or breakage to come into the house, and you have a case of simple trespass. You can't shoot a trespasser.
Oh.
Problem.
Remember that. You cannot shoot a trespasser. I had a lady down the road here who had a stable behind her house with horses in it, and she says, well, if I have my gun with me and I'm out in the stable and somebody walks into the stable, can't I shoot them? No, you can't. Why? Because you left the door open. Now they're guilty of simple trespass. If they just wandered in and they're standing there, they are not a threat to you yet. So you tell them, you're trespassing on my property, leave. If they won't leave after you've told them, that now becomes criminal trespass, but you still can't shoot them. You can call the police and say, hey, there's some nut job standing in my barn and the guy won't leave, come get him. But he has not presented an imminent threat to you of grave bodily harm. Now, if he advances towards you and he picks up a pitchfork, can you shoot him?
Yep.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Because now you have an imminent threat of great bodily harm. Let me use what's called the Shark Tank analogy to tell you defense of property and the difference between defense of life. Okay? And you can't take a life to protect a dog, by the way. Dogs under the law are considered property. So you've got a shark tank. You're down there in Monterey, and you've got your little kid up on your shoulders, and he's throwing food into the shark tank, and the kid drops into the shark tank. As a parent, are you going to jump in and save the kid?
Probably.
In most cases.
Yeah.
In most cases.
We're taking a survey. Hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, the eyes have it.
Okay. Now, let's say you're there throwing the food in, and all of a sudden your watch comes off your arm and it drops in the shark tank. Are you really going to jump into the shark tank to save your watch?
No, probably not.
Get the guy with the pool scoop, and the guy scoops your watch out of the shark tank and gives it back to you. So under what conditions and what would it take for you to jump into this shark tank? Okay? We have a castle doctrine state in California, believe it or not. It's the literal fall walls of your home, but it also could be your RV. It could also be your tent at a campsite. So you can have a concealed loaded gun in your RV if you park the RV someplace in a campsite and you're living in it temporarily. Or you go to a campsite and you pitch your tent, you can have a loaded concealable firearm inside the tent because that is your temporary residence.
Hmm.
State of California. Okay.
Is that common in most of the country?
Generally.
Okay. Just curious.
Don't try that in Colorado, in Illinois, or New York or New Jersey. Because they're just bat nuts.
No kidding.
Okay.
Crazy
so, yes. So if
good
you encounter somebody in your home, not wanted, they're not there just to steal your stuff. It's called an act of surprise. So we need to talk about the difference between a burglary versus a home invasion. In a burglary, like the movie Home Alone, the guys case the house for 3 or 4 days and assume that nobody is home, and burglars are never armed. They don't want to get a 5-year enhancement on their sentence if they're caught for a firearm violation. So burglars go into homes that are not inhabited and they're never armed. A home invasion is different. A home invasion is where people come into a home knowing that home is occupied. And when they do, 90% of the law is on your side. 90%. They're automatically guilty because the law in California has assumed legally they're not there to help you clean the house and wash the dishes. So you got to worry about that last 10%. Now, what's really funny is when a burglar goes into the house, they're in there for 90 seconds. And usually they're timing it. They're in there for 90 seconds. They go two places. The first place they go is the master bathroom medicine chest. They're looking for drugs. Oxycodone, whatever. The second place they go to, guess what that is, Aaron?
Closet. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Aaron?
No. It's Aaron's lingerie drawer.
Oh.
For some unknown reason, statistically,
no
women
pay dirt.
Hide. They hide an envelope with some emergency cash in
sure.
it, passport, and it goes right in the lingerie drawer. Those
yeah, you know, people keep their jewelry in there,
man,
too.
I'm going to have to go home and check that
it's
out.
It's incredible.
I know.
It's incredible.
I'm way smarter than you are, Bill. I've already been there and done that.
And this all comes from interviewing
I hit
burglars.
It in the lingerie drawer.
Huh.
Yeah, home invasion. If they come in there, you've got to assume that they are going to be hell-bent on hurting somebody because they expect resistance. They are always armed because they expect resistance. Okay? That's a given. They are always armed. Okay? So that's why you have to, you got to, you know, consider that something other than a simple burglary. But at least we know what they're stealing. Okay, moving right along quickly, let's talk about bear fear. Bear fear is insufficient justification for shooting somebody. Case in point, 85-year-old woman, she's standing inside her condo door, front door, guy, homeless guy is on the porch. The guy smells bad, looks bad, probably is somewhat bad, won't leave the porch. The woman shoots through the door and hits the guy. Fortunately, the guy didn't die. She goes to court. The deputy DA says, why did you shoot through the door at this man who was not an imminent threat? And she then testifies, well, he really scared me the way he looked and talked.
Mm.
That's their fear. Okay? Imagine you're on a jury and you're listening to this person tell this story. And you're shaking your head going, no, no, no. She was behind the locked door. She didn't have to do that. She could have just called the police. So always assume that you're on a jury. Reasonable fear is required. So you have a homeowner who is sitting there and relating the story about being home alone, let's say, and a guy breaks into the house, tries to break through the bedroom door, and she fired through the bedroom door to stop this threat. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Always pretend like you're on a jury, okay? So whatever the circumstances are, they have to be sufficient to excite the fears of a reasonable person. Let's get back to that last 10%. So you wind up in the middle of the night, you guys trying to break through the bedroom door, you're on the phone with 911, you've warned him twice, he continues to beat and kick on the door. You fire three or four rounds through the door. This is all on tape. The police show up and they say, what happened? Trust me, we know what happened. But we got to ask the question anyway.
Sure.
So you don't open the bedroom door, look at the guy laying on the carpet wrecking your floor, and say, that was a hell of a shot, wasn't it? Look at that. No, you don't say that.
Yeah,
that
probably doesn't. No selfie. Don't say that.
Yeah, yeah, the body cam footage, and then they burn you in effigy. We, believe it or not, have to take another fast break.
Okay, the only thing that you say that should come out of your mouth is, I did what I did because I was in fear for my life.
Yeah, that's key.
That's the key. Now you've met that last 10%.
Very good. So real quick, before we exit here, when we come back, I want to know if you have your safe room is your master bedroom and you have your flip locks and you've not knocked yourself unconscious with your door while replacing the screws, you got that all done. Do you have that door shut and locked at night while you're sleeping, or do you wait till you hear noise, jump out of bed, and shut and lock the door? And we'll be right back with the answer. We are speaking with Peter Friedman, and you're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Who is it?
When we catch a criminal, there's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
Okay, so are we barricaded in the room at night, or are we hoping we hear them, we jump up, and then we lock the door?
I have the greatest answer for that.
Nice.
Number one, if you created a safe room, then you have to go into the safe room at night and lock the door. And then some people say, well, I have a dog. And the dog likes to come in and jump on the end of the bed for a while, sleep on the end of the bed during the night. Okay, put a dog door in the bedroom door.
Mm-hmm.
So you think locking the bedroom door at night is a good idea?
Absolutely. You've got to have at least a 60-second head start. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, trust me, 60 seconds is like an eternity.
Yeah.
In 60 seconds, if you practice whatever your plan happens to be that we talked about earlier, 60 seconds is plenty of time. 60 seconds is plenty of time, all right, to hear what you're hearing, get into your case, get the gun, make sure it's loaded, okay, and listen. At that point, verify what you think is going on. Don't come out of the safe room, okay, especially because you're going to get on the phone with the 911 dispatcher and you're telling them, hey, I'm in the safe room, I'm in the master bedroom, and I'm armed, and there's somebody in the house. Okay, at 60 seconds, believe me, is a long time. It gives you all the time in the world to play with your air horn, the flash, whatever it happens to be. You practice this, and believe me, you'll see how much time you have. Okay, it only takes a second and a half to cover 21 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So you will have plenty of time. Go to sleep at night with the door locked, with the flip lock. You've got a hardened door. You're buying time. And if you absolutely have to let the dog in and out, just go and put a dog door in your bedroom door. It's that simple.
Hmm.
Nobody ever thinks of that.
Hmm.
Give you another funny scenario. This actually happened. It happened out in Antioch, out near where I live. 3 o'clock in the morning, a homeowner gets up because he hears somebody beating through the front door. Comes downstairs with his .357 revolver. Comes around the corner of the hallway, and sitting in his living room just inside the front door is a guy in a wheelchair with a baseball bat. The homeowner shot him. The homeowner got 5 years for voluntary manslaughter. Didn't actually kill the guy. Couldn't cripple him anymore.
The guy with a
wheelchair. So imagine, imagine you're on the jury. And this homeowner is saying, well, guy came around, the guy beat his way through the front door, he's inside my house, I have the legal right to shoot him. No, you don't. Because to have a crime, you've got to have the elements of the crime. You have to have intent, you've got to have mobility, you know, the ability to actually complete the crime. How much, 25 feet away, was this guy an imminent threat to the homeowner? Now, I'll change the scenario. Guy comes down at 3 o'clock in the morning, finds the guy sitting in his front room, and instead of a baseball bat, the guy's holding a firearm. Can you shoot him?
I think so at that point.
Yeah.
Hell yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because his time to get to you now is zero. He just pulls the trigger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He has the intent, and now because he's holding a firearm, he has the ability to do great bodily harm to you, or worse. Now you can shoot him. You see the difference between the scenarios?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Okay, so you got to have intent, ability, and opportunity for a crime, the elements of the crime, to be complete. Now you add imminent jeopardy to that because the guy now has a firearm that is pointed towards you. There's no question. There's no question. And you don't, like in the movies, put the firearm down. No, you don't do that because as you're doing that, he's pulling the damn trigger.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you're putting yours down.
And you can't get to yours quick enough.
Uh-uh.
Action beats reaction. Every single time. And deadly force, the use of deadly force ends, obviously, when there's no longer a threat. So the person that was threatening you has either given up or run away. Okay, they can no longer threaten you for one reason or another. Or the police arrive. When the police arrive, do not confront the police holding a firearm. Okay? The police will get into the house. You're going to use your glow stick. We get in the house. We come to the bedroom door. We see there's some guy ruining your carpet, assumed room temperature, and we know that you're in there. We know you've got a firearm because there's holes in the door. Okay? This is a contractor's dream. So we're going to tell you, turn on the white light, put the gun down on the bed or on the floor, and come out of the room with your hands in plain sight. Doesn't mean over your head. It just means we want to make sure that you're not holding the firearm. I had one case down in L.A. back in 67 where shots fired. We got up there. We told the old lady behind the bedroom door exactly what I just told you. She said, okay, no problem. Opens the door, she's got the gun in her hand.
Oh, dear.
Because when you go into shock and you panic, your heart rate goes over like 150, your blood pressure goes over 200, and you're panicked. That's like looking at the cell phone, trying to find the 911 key. Very hard to do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
These are just things that you kind of got to remember. Transporting firearms, once again, I want to go through that real quick. It has to be unloaded in a locked container. Now, one other thing I'm going to tell you, and I'm not going to give you legal advice, but I'm merely going to direct you to the Penal Code, Section 25600. Only because I've encountered this several times now in the last couple of months. Ex-wife, girlfriend gets a restraining order against the lunatic ex-boyfriend, ex-husband, gets a restraining order. They can't qualify for a CCW. But on the other hand, in the state of California, Penal Code 25600 grants a certain defense against carrying a concealed firearm under 25400 to somebody who has an active restraining order.
Hmm.
Most people don't know that.
So if you have an active restraining order against somebody else, you have the right to conceal carry?
I didn't say that. I said that 25600 is an affirmative defense against violating the concealed carry law.
Okay.
So you're in front of a jury. You're on the jury, and here's this girl, and she's got this lunatic ex-boyfriend who's been stalking her, who has done a number of things. He's keyed her car. He's broken into the house. Police have been called 3 or 4 times. She's got a restraining order. And the next guy that the next time this guy does this, okay, she's outside the house. She's getting into her car, and she pulls the gun out of her purse, and she shoots this guy in self-defense. The affirmative defense for her having the gun in the purse is the fact that she has an active restraining order against somebody having committed violent offenses. Read it carefully. Talk to an attorney. Talk to the DA. And they will tell you exactly what I just told you, because that's what they've told me. That's what the law says.
Hmm.
It's a defense against a violation of carrying a loaded concealed firearm without a permit.
Gotcha.
It's not a permit. It's a defense.
It's a defense, yeah.
Okay.
It's a defense, okay?
And so it'll cost you. So you might as well just get the permit.
Well, I would strongly recommend, because you're up there in Shasta County, that's a shall-issue county. Most of your northern counties are shall-issue instead of may-issue. And, you know, if you can pass the firearm qualification, do it.
Mm-hmm.
You can find the application. It's the standard California DOJ CCW application. It's on my website. If you go to the left-hand side under forms, I believe the second item is the California DOJ application for a CCW.
Nice.
And you can find people up there in your county who teach this.
And for all those people who think you can just go apply for a concealed weapons permit and then run around and carry a gun, not that easy. And there's a lot of training that does go with that. Mr. Friedman, we have hit the end of the road here. Can you believe it?
I've got 2 more hours.
Though. I know. We're definitely talking to you some more. So stay tuned.
I look forward to it.
Watch your email. We are looking forward to it, too. We're all running to the hardware store now.
You got it.
You've been listening to We the People. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.